I'd like to open today by turning back to Exodus chapter 13. You can turn back there, Exodus chapter 13. This is right in the heart of the original Exodus story. And no doubt these scriptures are very fresh in your mind as going over them before Passover and the days of unleavened bread. And we covered some of these last night during the night to be remembered as well. But I want to focus in on something specific in this passage, starting in verse 4 of Exodus chapter 13, starting in verse 4. Again, that's Exodus 13, starting in verse 4. It says, "On this day you are going out in the month of Abib." So we're just jumping right into the story here. The 10 plagues just happened a chapter earlier. The nation of Egypt is just reeling from disaster after disaster, and they want the Israelites out, like right now, while they still have some sort of a nation left. And finally, the dreams of the Hebrews, generations of Hebrews, as they're in slavery, is about to be fulfilled this very night. Verse 5, "And it shall be, when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, and Amorites, Hivites, Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service in this month. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters." So this is exactly where we are right now in the story. Just fast forward. Verse 8, "And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, 'This is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt.' And it shall be a sign to you on your hand and a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. And you shall therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year." Now, what struck me as I read through these scriptures is how God presents his plan to the Israelites in kind of a duality form. He remembered his promise to them, and he's rescuing them from slavery. And that's essentially where they are at this point in the story. They're remembering their past, their history, where they came from. But the flip side of this duality is all of the future statements. Why did God do this? It was to bring them into a promised land. And why there? Why go to a land flowing with milk and honey, with great abundance? Well, so that he could have a unique and special relationship with a group of people that he called his special treasure. Now, each holy day is structured in a similar way. There's an Old Testament application or a purpose that has one level that was right for those people in that time. And then often in the New Testament, that same holy day is expanded and the meaning is pointed to the future that is yet to come. There's often this link between the past and the future, an introspective analysis of where we've come from and a prescriptive vision of where you want to be. They're all linked together at the hip, so much so that if you take just one or the other, just the past or just the future, then you chip away at what is an amazing and dynamic plan that God has put in place from day one. Let's skip ahead to Exodus chapter 16. Too often, the Israelites were only focused in the past, and they lost sight of the future, even as God was working to reinforce it with them in real time. Exodus chapter 16, starting in verse 1. "And they," that's the Israelites, "journeyed from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt." Verse 2. "And then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, 'Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill the whole assembly with hunger.'" You've brought us out here just to kill us. There's nothing for us here. Where are we even going? What are we even doing here? Well, in preparation for this sermonette, I went back through the whole book of Exodus, and I tried to find all the examples of the Israelites themselves looking forward to the Promised Land. And if they're in there, they're pretty few and far between. Instead, whenever something happened, whenever an obstacle occurred, whenever a trial came upon them, they constantly just looked into the past, often romanticizing how they had it even at that. So much so that as we skip ahead a little further, this time to Exodus chapter 19, we'll see that God has to continually reinforce this vision, both parts, the correct remembrance of the past and a future vision that is the goal. Exodus 19, let's start in verse 3 now. Exodus 19, starting verse 3. It says, "And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, tell the children of Israel." In my mind's eye, when I read this, I just feel like it's got a hint of exasperation to it. I don't know if that was what it was like back then, but that's just how my mind reads it. Verse 4 says, "You have seen what I have done to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel." Now, God clearly wanted them to remember their past, remember the signs and the wonders and the mighty deeds that brought them out of slavery all the way to where they are now. That's enshrined in their rituals and their memorials and as a key part of the Holy Day plan, of course. But God didn't just free them from slavery for its own sake. That was part of the plan, but that wasn't the plan. Now let's fast forward today to us as Christians in our walk now. Especially at this time of year, it's required of us to look into our past, to reflect on our own spiritual journey. And we are to proactively find those areas of spiritual yeast and sin and to root them out. De-leaven our spiritual lives and fill it with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth, righteousness as modeled by Jesus Christ. But in that process, it can be all too easy to get focused exclusively on the past or our failures and that yeast that keeps popping up in our lives. It's easy to get bogged down looking backwards at the expense of focusing on the future. Getting the spiritual leaven out of our lives is part of God's plan for us. But that is not the only plan for us. Just like God is not raising or training the most diligent spring cleaners or the best ingredient readers, nor is he counting on us to be the most introspective people on the planet. But rather, his goal is to build a family. His goal is to have a family with spiritual character that will live in harmony and peace and joy for all eternity. I would like to encourage us to ensure that we have an equal balance of retrospection, looking into the past year and into our current lives to root out sin, to continually shape our character, all those things that are good and right and proper, but also to keep in mind why we are doing those things, the vision of what God has promised for us. Equal parts working and improving on ourselves now, with our eyes fixed forward to the promise of what is to come. Get that spiritual leavening out. Fill up your stomach with righteousness, love, and compassion. But why? Revelation chapter 21. Revelation chapter 21. We'll start in verse 3, Revelation chapter 21. This is the why. "And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. And God himself will be with them and be their God. and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain. Those things are gone. Verse 7, and he who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. Getting a stubborn group of slaves out of Egypt was no mean feat. But getting them into the promised land and set up for a new relationship, that was the goal in the vision. Getting this stubborn, flawed person to put his old man to death forever is also no mean feat. But the promise of eternal life in God's family, well, that is a goal and a vision that outshines all things. Let us eat unleavened bread this week. And each time we do, let us remember that wonderful promise that awaits his servants in the eternity to come.